Yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent. That ought to set me straight.
Welcome to Commander's Horn, episode 23. Nilfgaard has arrived. Let the invasion begin. The latest patch is here, including a recent hotfix on Wednesday. Grey Boxer and I will be talking about the new five-faction meta, and we'll shine the spotlight on a great Northern Realms deck for you to try. All this, and hopefully some tempered, objective reactions, on this episode of Commander's Horn. Thanks so much for joining us today, once again, on Commander's Horn, a weekly Gwent podcast. I am one of your hosts, Dane McBeard, and I am joined once again by the Lord Commander of the Dwarven Vikings, Josh Greyboxer. How are you today?
I am bloody tired of Elven Blarney.
Actually, I'm doing well. I'm loving the new patch. I'm building completely new decks and playing the ladder. I think that's probably been everyone's week. And specifically, I've been playing some Skellige and Radovid on the ladder. Seems good.
Seems good. And if you're tired of Elven Blarney, it's a good time to be alive because the way that Scoia'tael was working isn't working that way. And I think, and we're going to talk about this later, but I think that a lot of people are relearning how to play as and against Scoia'tael. Me personally, I've been playing Monsters Weather off stream more so, but... Monsters Weather is really good, and but I've been playing. I tried a little bit of Radovid as well, and I've been kind of, you know, I've been dabbling, right? I've been exploring, trying out different decks. Nilfgaard as well. I think there's a Morvrand deck out there for me somewhere.
But, so good too, man. There's a lot of ways to build Nilfgaard decks right now, and everybody's trying them all out. And dabbling, as you say, is really the name of the game this week.
Yeah, I think that many people can agree. Patch time is one of the best times because everything's all shaken up. I think in a lot of cases, in some previous card games I've played, when patches hit or when new cards come into the meta, some people just stick to what's strong and they let people explore and then they just crush them. But in this case, everything has changed. So you can't just go, okay, well, I'm just going to play some Bound Scoia'tael and just beat people who are trying new things. It's all very different and we all got to kind of feel it out. I like it a lot, though.
Yeah, it's been, as you say, it's been really, really great to get into the new patch and try out all the new decks. And there's, believe me, though, there's plenty of Elven Blarney still out there. So we'll get into that later.
For sure. This episode of Commander's Horn is recorded on Wednesday and we'll be posting on Thursday, but this will be changing. So in order to accommodate some changes in our work lifestyle, starting next week, we will be recording on Monday evenings and trying to post the podcast on either Tuesday or Wednesday. A lot of it depends if it's going to be a live episode or if it is a guest episode or however it turns out.
Yeah, guys, this is all very new, so please bear with us. In any case, you'll get a new episode of the podcast earlier than normal. So no one's ever complained about that.
Absolutely. And you can follow our updates and get in contact with us on Twitter and many different channels. First of all, you can find Commander's Horn on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcasting apps. And let us know what you think about the patch, the new faction, the big changes, or the game in general. Send your emails to commandershornpodcast@gmail.com. or tweet at us at Commander's Horn.
Commander's Horn is supported by our patrons at patreon.com/commandershorn. Thank you to everyone helping us make the best content we can.
The game has changed.
It has.
From first look to patch to hotfix, the game has been in a constant state of motion. Let's talk about it all after this short break. From the Poland event to now, there have been 6 versions of the Nilfgaard build shown to the public. So there. I'm seeing your notes now. There's
Poland build number one, which we know as the Espresso build, after shout out to McCall PG, made us all espresso, and then we went into the room and played Nilfgaard for the first time. That was in the morning. Yeah. That was build number one.
hyped up on some nice espresso and some nice European espresso, which is usually the best espresso. Top notch, top notch. So there were two builds in Poland. There was the build that CD Projekt Red played on the live stream. There was our press review build, which we got to play this last weekend, which was a ton of fun.
Yeah, buff Skellige, please.
Yeah, buff Skellige, please. And then there was the live, and then there was the live patch that we got on Monday.
Yeah, they buffed Skellige.
And then they buffed Skellige, please. And now we have a hotfix.
Yeah, buff Skellige, please.
Now we're back to asking for buffs. So that's six different builds that we've seen of Nilfgaard, and Nilfgaard has really only been in the hands of the public for two full days.
Three days.
It's pretty wild to see all the different faces of Nilfgaard, kind of all the different spots. You know, we first saw stuff like Emperor Brigade being so incredibly strong and then them coming down and then them Poland coming back up again. It's, yeah, exactly. And Viljafort starting at 4 and going up to 6 and now he's 8.
Dregbondu has been changed the most.
Dregbondu has gone up and down. King Bran as well has been changed a number of times as well.
We'll get into both those changes later because those are both involved in the most recent hotfix.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But generally, I think, you know, when we're talking about the press build, and of course, we're talking about the event in which a number of streamers and content creators, not just us of the English-speaking community, but in Poland, and I believe there are a number of others as well, Russia, I can't speak for all regions, I can't speak for all events, but generally, we love how much the community has been involved in the feedback, and CD Projekt Red has let everybody voice their concerns, questions, praises, and in some cases, their salty rage about this game we love so much. So
always.
Gwent is a product of a lot of hard work from the team at CD Projekt Red, but there's so much of the community wrapped up in it, and this has been the best beta test I've been a part of, and it makes the future of the game that much more exciting for me personally.
Yeah, and we've seen the hard work firsthand, mm-hmm. and I also love how much the community has really cared about the small changes. Even little buffs and nerfs are always noticed, and people truly care about this game, and I think that's irreplaceable. It's a value that you can't put a number on, or you can't really quantify, because mm-hmm. caring about something and then also working on it means it's definitely going to get better. So really looking forward to the community members who are involved in giving input to CD Projekt Red, and of course the guys working on the team.
I think there's a lot of people out there that love this game a lot. They clearly play it a ton. They're very passionate about it, but they're, you know, they won't pull any punches if there's stuff that really kind of doesn't feel that fun. And I feel like I experienced that a little bit this week. I think I had a little problem with the Clan Tuisark Axemen, and I just I just couldn't keep a lid on it. I think it's probably the saltiest I've been, but I'm over it now. I get it now. It's a bit easier. I think patch timelines just kind of really mess me up sometimes.
Yeah. I feel you on that one. I remember playing you on the press release build that first that weekend it opened up, and you were testing out your new Consume Monsters deck, and I just stared at it as it developed more and more power as the Vran warrior went insane. And I think that I think there's some memes out there of my face on stream after you played that.
I remember someone in my chat, because I actually don't even know if I didn't watch all those VODs, but there was someone in my chat that just said, quote, "This is stupid, Greyboxer 2017.
So, of course, and this is what we talk about. There was six builds, and this is why there were six builds. So speaking of builds in the future, we know prior to the open beta build, we're going to have a wipe. The wipe has been confirmed, and while this isn't new news, we haven't spoken about it yet. It hasn't been on one of our podcasts. So mm-hmm. we know that there hasn't been a date set, but we do know the details of what you're going to keep, even though there's going to be a wipe. And it's fair, and I would say pretty generous. And at the moment, I am currently no regrets crafting all of my favorite cards and premiums for display. Doesn't matter how much it costs, I'm spending the scraps.
Absolutely. Now, we have a link in the show notes if you want to see the news article about it, if you haven't seen it yet. But just so you know, this is basically what they're offering on the closed beta status update. Again, the term wipe is definitely a community term. No one at Gwent is using the term wipe. But basically, every card keg you purchase, you will get that keg back. So if you've spent real money on kegs, you get them back one for one. You'll get two kegs for every 5 levels after level 5. You will get 2 kegs for each rank you achieved on the ladder. You will get all your end of season rewards when they come. And you will get all items granted as gifts from CD Projekt Red. For example, Premium Geralt, which all beta testers have received. So it sounds fair. It sounds generous. Definitely all the money that we've invested in kegs, we will be getting back. So, and I think that that's absolutely fair. I think that, I mean, it is fair. I mean, I wouldn't want it any other way, personally.
Well, I remember talking with Rethus. He said he took a look at the data and he figured a lot of people who play regularly will have something like 40 to 80 kegs, even if they're free to play. So there's a lot of advantages to being in the closed beta, and they're not going to wipe them all away. They'll just literally reset the card collections, and you'll get everything you've paid for and a good portion of what you've earned along the way.
For sure. And I think that, and this is still weeks, if not months away, like we said, there's no date set, but we do know that when open beta is scheduled, we're going to know in advance. I think that they really want to take care of us and they don't want us to be surprised by anything, especially something as serious as losing your card collection after spending this much time in it. So you could have 10, 15, 20 more levels from here. Your rank could be higher than now. So there's going to be a lot coming back, I think, for most people, especially now this information has started to come out. Very cool of them to make this little graphic and to make this news post and be very clear and upfront and transparent about it. So we've had a hotfix today. So we're talking about all the different builds, and we've already gotten a build as of this morning, at least on North America was in the morning.
Yeah.
There has been a change already to a couple of cards. So let's talk about these cards. Now, there's 4 big changes, but there is, there's a fair amount of changes.
Numerous bug fixes, truly. A good load of them.
Yeah, there are a couple of bug fixes, I think, mainly. I mean, again, the link is in the show notes. Feel free to follow it if you want the full details, exactly as it was written by CD Projekt Red. Some bugs about how Isengrim was interacting with opponents playing decoy and how fireball traps were triggering on some leader abilities. And, neophytes all over the place where they shouldn't be, getting into all sorts of trouble. So stuff like that. But there are some banner changes, and I think one of them is Yennefer Conjurer. So this card came out into the patch and was surprisingly strong.
She changed a lot, really.
She changed a lot, for sure.
She was previously, if you remember, she was a 4-strength gold that removed the top strength unit on the board, removed 1 strength from the top strength unit on the board. It could be your own unit, but she wasn't seeing a whole lot of play, I guess. And so they applied a couple of buffs to her, one of which being she only harms the opposing units, and they buffed her strength to 7.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So now she's basically slowly lowering the ceiling on your board, like slowly crushing, starting at the topmost unit and pinging. And if there's a number of units at the same strength level, they all get tagged. And it's oppressive, and especially when Skellige, where Axemen are very much in vogue right now, and they get huge buffs anytime anything can hit multiple targets with damage, really hard to keep up with them. So Yennefer being at 7 strength and only hitting the opposing row was massive.
She was really hard to remove.
Yeah. So she's a little bit easier to remove now. She's down to 5 as of this recording. At least she's just slightly less oppressive. My counter to Yennefer has been Ancient Foglets, personally.
Yeah.
Because they just eat that ping and then get right back up there again. But it's not easy for every faction to deal with it. So now at least Vernon Roach can eliminate her if it's not Northern Realms you're playing against. If you're playing Radovid, you can eliminate her. Even if you are playing against Northern Realms, Yorveth can eliminate her. Again, if you're not playing against Northern Realms, Northern Realms still may be the best place for Yennefer and maybe Skellige as well.
Yeah, that's I think where she'll avoid most of the Yorveths and Vernon Roaches of the world. But most of the time, you're going to be seeing her in play in Northern Realms anymore. If you're still playing her in another faction, that's pretty risky because now there's a lot of removal cards that can kill her.
But I think it discourages inclusion. So if less people are playing it, less people will tech against it, and it'll kind of just be a card that people play. We'll see how it shakes out. It just changed. I haven't even been on the ladder yet today, so we'll see.
And then we saw the hotfix to Saris on Krayt, who was changed from 12 strength down to 8. And this is fair. She was included in almost every deck, especially Queensguard. And since a lot of Queensguard decks were in vogue with the buffs to Bran, we saw a ton of her. probably a fair change, and based on the data, whether it's inclusions, whether it's win rate, they can see probably how many players win by playing her in round three. And I think this is significant. This is one of the largest, if not the largest, strength nerf to any gold card. We have seen buffs of four value on golds, like we just talked about Vilgefortz. Zarthissius was also had four strength added to him. Mm-hmm. So I've never seen another gold card have four strength removed from it. So this one's sitting a little rough with me. I mean, Breathus came into my stream last night and saw a 20 plus gold Ceres plus her Queen's Guards beat my villain Tretton Mirth plus three other golds plus card advantage. And then he chimed in saying that changes were coming, but is removing four strength from Ceres really what you would say is an optimal change?
I think it's all together, because Skellige got a look at, I think. So I think when you're looking at Ceres, so you already had the Queen's Guards that were very, very strong. And you already had Drake Bondu, who is getting bounced, and we'll talk about that in a second. But you also had, you know, and then there's Axeman as well. And I don't know if you run Axeman and Queen's Guards in the same build, but generally Skellige had such an easy time closing gaps. I think that's what Skellige is doing right now. When you can close gaps very easy, it's easy to get ahead. And when it's easy to get ahead, you can play the last card. And sometimes your last card can be this gigantic Ceres that comes crashing down. And even if you're winning by 20 plus points, Ceres will be enough. Or you can use Ceres to win a round and just bring her back again. And she's just, you know, she's such a huge unit. She's a bomb, and she's a bomb on more than one round. So I think that, again, to deter inclusion, or I think in this case, maybe to just curb her strength a little bit in light of all the other stuff that Skellige is doing really well, that this is a fair change. And I think that it's based on data, what they saw. I think it's fair.
Yeah, I think it's arguable, though, that Hjalmar is in the same position. He just requires being demoted. And he's a giant bomb that comes down. And a lot of the things that we hear when balance discussions happen, hey, something's fine, a lot of those discussions revolve around whether or not there are counters available. Maybe the problem with Ceres is that she's buffing base strength. So she should be a giant, maybe she could be a giant gold card, but then she goes back down to 12 as a silver in the graveyard.
Yeah, maybe she can revert to a state. You know, and we see K-Ran do this. It reverts to a state when it goes into the graveyard. It reverts back to 8, and you see Okvist now, even in Skellige, when it's buffed up to 7 or 8, when it triggers, it goes back down to 6. So it's possible that maybe Ceres can be changed to be strong when you play her, but weaker later. I don't think it's inconsistent to do something like that, but I think that all the Skellige goals require setup, and they all have strength involved when you can meet all of those requirements. Hjalmar is better, you know, when you get to kill the Lord of Unvik, Madman Lugos, when he can trigger, Ceres when you can play the Queen's Guards, Kambi when you can align the stars and they can be good. I think Kambi might come back. We'll see.
Well, I don't know that we'll be seeing any 20 plus strength Ceres anymore for a few reasons. You want to tell them about Bran?
Yeah, well, there is also Bran now. Bran, this is kind of a surprising change because I don't know if I identified this as a problem. And I think that, then again, that's not really, I feel like I had more problems with the Axeman and the self-wounding build. So it's possible that the discard build, I know the discard build beat the crap out of me a couple games, but I saw more self-wounding than discard in my experience. But Bran, poor Bran, he's gone through so many changes. They're just trying to make him competitive without being too strong. And they changed his ability completely. He no longer, to use the Magic the Gathering reference, tutors a card out of your deck, and that he can grab, you know, reference to the demonic tutor card of old. Doesn't grab any card you want out of your deck. He does a different thing. He discards from the deck. You no longer lose card advantage, and he buffs those cards when you discard them. Used to be 2. Now it's down to 1. And we played a build. One of the builds in Poland also was at 1. As well. So they were toying with this idea to begin with. This isn't a snap decision. It's a tuning decision, I think. And with the change to Queen's Guards already being nerfed to 2 in the live patch, and now Bran being tuned down as well.
And just to clarify, I wanted to say that, you know, Bran is still doing what we said he was doing. You choose any 2 cards from the deck that you want, and you can discard them and add +1 to their base strength. But it used to be +2, and now it's +1. And now Bran, instead of being 4 value, is now 2.
Right on. Basically, 2 overall value. And you do still have control over the cards that go into the graveyard, so you still kind of have control over these cards that you want to see every game, which is kind of what Bran did. But I think it remains to be seen when it all shakes out if Bran is still, you know, he was really strong. Those Queensguard decks were crazy. If you couldn't stop the Queensguards or weather the row, or even if you could weather the row, the Armorsmith comes down and undoes everything. It was just so much strength. So we'll see how it is now. Maybe it's, I mean, it's, again, haven't been on the ladder yet since the changes. And then finally, contributing factor to all of this stuff with Dregbondu not being relentless, bouncing Dregbondu, 3 strength to everything in the graveyard. Everything in your graveyard is double digits. It was madness.
Yeah,
it was
madness. There were so many builds that this would work with. Almost every single build revolves around discard. It doesn't matter whether or not you're running Bran. Your spies are discarding. You want units in the graveyard because they either get buffed or you're just saving them for later. And Dreg bouncing was incredibly powerful. And I think Dreg bouncing might have been the reason behind all these issues. Is not only was Saris hitting the board at 20, but the Queen's Guards were hitting at 12 to 14 apiece.
Yeah.
And when that happens, there's nothing you can do, as you say.
And when we say bouncing, we're referring to decoy specifically. So just to make that clear.
Yeah, because the new decoy just bounces Dregbondu, at least it used to. And now it will not, because he is now relentless.
Yeah, he's relentless and he's fleeting. So
you can't resurrect him anymore. That was in the notes or in the build previously. They just added relentless to him for this hotfix.
So a lot of these changes are affecting the meta as we speak. I think people are laddering. People have been laddering today. I'll be laddering a little later as well. But let's talk about the latest meta. And we'll also shine a spotlight on a very cool deck as well. Join us in our strategy section right now.
Maybe not today and not tomorrow, but someday someone will find a way to take you down.
So, McBeard, how are we feeling about the factions right now after we've had a few days on the new patch and just read about all the hotfix changes?
Well, let's talk about the Empire. You know, they're kind of in the spotlight. They are really the star of the latest patch. How is Nilfgaard doing? This is a very interesting question because I think that Nilfgaard being a brand new faction, you know, a lot of the nuances, we've had a lot of time to spend with Skeletal Monsters, Skellige, and Northern Realms. We haven't had a ton of time to spend with Nilfgaard. So feeling out where they really excel. I mean, when you look at Skeletal and how they really rose to power with the Elven Mercenary Blue Mountain Commando bouncing that is no longer in the game, but it was. That was always available, right? And it's kind of like how Reaver Scouts in Northern Realms, the way Reaver Scouts would thin the deck. It was always there, but people didn't really kind of clue into that until later, and then they eventually had to change it. But there were patches that went by where Elven Mercenary and Blue Mountain Commando did the same thing that they did for patches, but it wasn't until, you know, the latest competitive update in which we saw people really, you know, try to abuse these cards. So Nilfgaard, I don't think, has had that attention yet, but I think so. They're really finding their footing, in my opinion. I think Morvran seems like a very strong leader. I think the fact that he pulls golds is pretty good. I don't know if it's too strong, but I think it's notable. I was talking to some people in Discord about that today.
Yeah, I think that Morvran's incredibly strong, but as you say, we're right now at the very beginning of whatever this meta is going to be, and Nilfgaard being the new faction, we don't know what the meta Nilfgaard deck is. And so, in the immortal words of Dr. Ian Malcolm of Jurassic Park, the meta finds a way. So Morvran might be at the head of this, because not only is thinning always so valuable in every deck, but you can replay it with K here, and it pulls golds. Now, we do know that Morvran did change from our build. We were talking about all these builds way back in Poland. Morvran used to be able to pull any disloyal unit you wanted, including Cantarella, including Letho. So that's all changed now. Now he's playing one of 3 cards on the top of your deck, which is still great. It synergizes with Stefan Skellen as well. But is that really the way to find the meta? I think that the meta, like you say about the Elven Mercenaries, it'll revolve around the bronze cards that the players make work the best.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that Morvran just feels like more like a... I feel like Morvran was very specific in what he did when he pulled disloyal cards. It was very much like, you have to play a very specific deck. You have to play disloyal units. But I feel like he feels more like a versatile leader now with the new ability. I think it was a great change.
He's a herald now.
Yeah. And there's Emir reveal. Perhaps you want to play the Manganal or the Mangonel or just Mangos, depending on.
Call them the Mangos.
Let's call them those Mangos.
He's dropping Mangos on that siege row. Get out of that round.
Yeah, pretty much. It's scary when one goes down with his ability being revealing three cards now in the build that we have right now. And you get that information, but that information doesn't actually get you strength on the board unless you have something that specifically interacts with it, like the spotters
sure.
or the mangonels. But you have cards to do it, and I think that there's something in there somewhere. And then John Calvet, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but John Calvet at one point was pulling all disloyal units to your side of the board, and then it was just a row. But I believe in the build we were playing, it was the tooltip that was incorrect. I played against a John Calvet last night before the hotfix was applied, and I swear he pulled more than one row, even though his tooltip said it was just the row.
Yeah, I think he's the sleeper leader right now. You know that from my YouTube video, I think that he's the best leader. That was before the change to Morvren. So it's really hard to say right now who's the best leader. But I feel like as Nilfgaard, as a faction, is finding its meta and finding its footing, every player should be experimenting with each one of these leaders and maybe not just relying on Morvren being the jack of all trades, probably the better all-around leader, and trying to make John Calvet work.
Yeah, he feels he's very swingy. He feels kind of like how Harold can feel in that you can just kind of pull a whole bunch of strength out of nowhere. Well, not at
yeah, I know. I know. I said that Morvren was kind of like Harold, and I was using that because he's probably the best all around leader. But I think Calvet has the actual Harold comparison down pat, like you say.
All roads lead to Harold comparisons. I think when Harold is as strong as he can be. But let's talk about Skoyatel. So I think that what do you think about Skoyatel right now?
Well, I think that everyone having to effectively relearn the faction has produced some pretty cool deck lists and a few oppressive ones, because of course they do. As you know that I'm for Mahakam! My dwarves have been struggling because even though Barclay has been buffed, now he's an 8 strength, you can't just get rid of him with a thunder, you can still bounce him for value. They're still weak to the same things they've always been weak to. And even though buffs are being saved, so maybe Frost isn't so bad, they're still weak to Igni. They're weak to a new card known as Vilgefortz, and I think that he's being played in a lot of Nilfgaard decks, not only because he has, let's say, the best premium art in the game, but also because he has a really cool effect and he's a targeted Scorch. And as we talked about previously, Scorch is back in the meta because of all the buffs. Buffs are better now because Weather doesn't remove them. So Dwarves, I'm having a struggle getting them going, and I'm going to go back into the Gwent Labs this week and see if I can produce something pretty strong, but at the moment, I think Dragoons are better. Do you know anything about these Dragoon decks going around? Because Radovid's really popular right now. We'll talk about him later, but Dragoon decks have been doing quite well.
Yeah, there's been, and I think this has been floating around since Dragoons were changed to do what they do, which is buff a unit in hand.
Plus four
now. It used to be plus three, and now it's plus four. So you can buff a card, like, I think in a lot of situations, and I ran into this situation last night where you buff Kieran in the deck, and then you play it, and when he flips over, surprise, he's 18 strength. So I think it's really strong. I think that people can come to expect it. I think that that won't get everybody all the time. And I was playing Weather Monsters at the time, and Weather Monsters just shuts that right down. You see a face down card, you weather that row. So it's period. Yeah. And but I think it's still interesting because I know that there's a variation you can play. I think there is a player named Knowledgeless who played it this way, and I know that Swim's been experimenting as well with playing Kieran and buffing Kieran, and I don't know if Swim has been doing this, but I know that there was Operator on Kieran and then using Morin to eat your opponent's Kieran because you're giving them a huge unit that you can just kill with Morin. So I don't know if that's like huge right now. I've only seen it once. I've only been against one Dragoon deck. I played a lot of games last night and during the day as well, but I only found one Dragoon deck. So it's possible that that's still kind of coming together.
Yeah. And I've been playing Radovid, and there's simply not enough weather in a Radovid deck to deal with a giant Dragoon unit. And the thing is, they can put it on any unit they want to. And one of the strongest units to put it on is Teruvial, right? You can worry about weathering the row, and if you don't have weather, then there's nothing you can do about a gigantic Teruvial. Additionally, what if you play it on Brienne? which is the 4-strength agile.
Yeah.
You can definitely play it around the weather.
It's true. And I think that, and Kieran and Truvial are also agile as well. And they're face down, so you can't really deal with it until it's kind of too late if you don't know what's coming. So it's very strong to have a unit that basically is on the board. That strength matters, but you can't do anything about it. You can't move it, except you have Morin, of course. But you can't remove it. And then Bran, of course, can come down and just remove a huge amount of strength. And we know that there's a lot of big units that are susceptible to removal right now. Just for the same reason that Scorch is big, Bran may come back. I haven't seen Bran yet. I don't know if that's if she's out there. Again, she deals whatever her strength level is. She deals that to another unit, and that's how she's.
Yeah, had a 20 come down against me as a third round bomb playing as Northern Realms, and there was nothing I could do.
Yeah, and that's really effectively 40 if she gets full value, right? So she's 20 on the board and she removes 20. That's a pretty massive silver card. Much like Elias is a massive silver card, I've been playing a couple of Elven builds. It's been, 50-50. I don't know I think that there's a lot of refining to be done because Scoia'tael, much like Nilfgaard, feels very new in that they, they're familiar, but, you have to rewire a little bit the way you think about how the cards work and when you're playing against them or as them. It's, the order of play. And some of the inclusions, what's good, which isn't good anymore. How many specials do you run? Do you even run Mercs? Do you run Isengrim? If so, are you running? You probably want to run Elias as well, which means you're probably running Vanguards. But then if you're not running any of those cards, it's a different deck. Is it an Elven deck at all? And I haven't even tried the new Hawker Smuggler. So there's still a lot of experimenting to go for.
Smugglers get a lot of value in the new meta because nobody passes anymore.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like how Axemen are work. You put an Axeman down, it's just, if you can't deal with that strength, it's going to be hard to win that round.
Yeah. And speaking of the aggro deck, we want to talk about monsters.
So I've been playing a lot of monsters lately. I played a number of games last night. I got myself that shiny rank 13 badge finally.
Ooh.
It was a long time coming.
Congrats.
But I played. Thanks. I was playing Dagon Weather Monsters, which is, and it's like a mountain of weather. It's like you're throwing Skellige Storm, Man White Frost, Caranthar Woodland Spirit. No Aeromancy, but you have Dagon for that as well. Dimeridium Bomb to deal with some crazy buffs or some gold cards. So it's really oppressive weather, a couple of adrenaline rushes. But it feels like a really strong deck. I was dealing with the Axemen problem that I've been having. There were some other decks that were thrown in there every now and then. I'd run into a little bit of Scoia'tael. I'd run into Radovid here and there. I ran into John Calvet 3 times, which I found strange. No Morvrans, just John Calvets. But I feel like weather is really strong right now, personally. It thins. It's consistent enough. The only thing that sucks is drawing Adrenaline Rush on round 3, but otherwise I really like the deck right now.
The weather deck that you were playing, I assume you didn't run a whole lot of units.
Yeah, it's basically running 3 Ancient Foglets, 3 Standard Foglets, the Wild Hunt Riders, and Sarah, and Ice Giant, and Alzer's Double Cross as well, that usually pulls out an Ancient Foglet or Ice Giant, which is handy, again, just for thinning and just kind of making it a little bit more consistent and reliable.
Yeah, so I ran a similar deck, except that I dropped Sarah very early because she gets killed by everything. Mm-hmm. And it is hard to get value out of her. Although she does get the removal target, she's still just getting killed by either a Scorch or, practically anything else that has 3 removal on it, as a lot of units do now, thanks to the updates. Mm-hmm. And I found that you can thin pretty effectively by playing a Fog, getting your 3 Foglets out. And then you have a couple of First Lights. And what the strategy is, you mulligan away all of your Wild Hunt Riders and all of your Foglets, except for maybe one. You play Fog. You play Alzer's Double Cross to get out the Ice Giant. And then you play a First Light to get the Wild Hunt Riders out.
Mm.
And that level of thinning, plus any other First Lights you have for additional Foglets, I feel like, plus Avalok... Man, you could really get that deck thinned. I was regularly getting my deck down to just a handful of cards by round 3, and I felt that was a really efficient way to have a lot of weathers in your hand while simultaneously being able to put down board strength.
I actually don't run any first lights, so maybe that's surprising. And I run, and I find that Sarah actually does live because ancient foglets draw a lot of removal. Generally, is in my experience, that's how it's been. So I've been managing to play, and I play Ragnarok in this deck as well. Like, it's crazy amounts of weather. It's like,
yeah, I love
obscene
Ragnarok.
Amounts of weather. So it's lots of fun. But that's not the only monster deck that's out there. There is a consume variant as well that runs Nekkers, sometimes Nekker Warriors, sometimes Harpies. Ekimaras, you could run Vrans. I've seen the Vrans being really popular. Kayran to make sure you lock in that strength as well. Succubus is seeing play as well. And I got nailed. I got beat by Succubus one time last night. And I just, it was so aggravating because it was the one that I adrenaline rushed. It was the ancient fog that I adrenaline rushed. And then I couldn't
weather
it.
Did it keep it?
Yeah, yeah. Because I foolishly adrenaline rushed the stronger of the foglet, ancient foglets. I just didn't expect Succubus. I only saw Succubus once last night, and that's what got me. And then I just lost by enough that that was the misplay that got me. Succubus is a cool card. A lot of people are loving the pun Succubusted. I don't know if she is busted, but I think that she's pretty strong, especially if you can get value by grabbing an adrenaline rush unit or another like really strong unit like an Axeman or something like that. That's kind of where that's like the goal for you when you play Succubus.
Yeah, you want something that's just going to significantly overvalue what you're giving away when you play her down. So I think Succubus is really interesting. I don't run Succubus in my weather deck for obvious reasons, because it doesn't work with weather, but with consume I would be willing to give it a try, especially if it gives me a nice juicy unit to eat.
With consume especially. I think consume is a little bit more popular than weather right now because it uses a lot of the new cards and, you know, cards that have been improved or changed. Whereas weather is very standard. There's not a lot of new stuff. I mean, Alzheimer's Double Cross is better now because of the buff. It's basically like a reverse King of Beggars. You get that bonus 3 that King of Beggars would kind of be giving you in a unit, but it doesn't actually affect the board. You just buff a unit that's already weather immune. So it's good. I like Alzheimer's Double Cross in that deck, and it's less interesting, I think, as far as like the patch and what the patch has been offering, but I do like weather right now. I think it's very strong.
Yeah, and you say about the King of Beggars, I think that maybe the buff to Alzers means that Monsters isn't running King of Beggars anymore. Additionally, if you don't run a lot of units, then you can simply use a first light and rally because it saves, you know, it saves a silver slot. So what do you think about Skellige these days? I think that Skellige has, again, two archetypes that are seeing a lot of play. And we've talked quite a lot about the discard archetype being the Queensguard decks with Saris. Do you want to do a few words on what discard is doing? And I'll talk about the Axemen build.
Yeah, so basically discard Skellige and now the hotfix has been applied. So Skellige's place on the ladder is up in the air. I cannot speak with any authority now that the changes to Brand, Ceres, Drake, what really is happening. But the idea is that you play Brand, you put your Queen's Guards in the graveyard, and you have one in your hand. You play your Queen's Guards, you buff them with Shieldsmith. Next round, they're all in the graveyard. You play Drake. If your opponent can't remove Drake, you bounce Drake. Now, you can't do that anymore, but that's what was happening. And then you've played your Queen's Guards enough time that Ceres is a monster. Again, Ceres has been nerfed. I still think... I mean, 4 strength is a lot when you talk about nerfing a gold, but I think that they may still be strong enough to be competitive just because of how Armorsmith works. It undoes weather, and the way that Skellige can get ahead on cards because they do have 2 spies still. I mean, Udalric is no longer a spy, but card advantage is still something that Skellige can do very well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it does really remain to be seen, but that's generally the core idea. You protect yourself against weather, you buff units in the graveyard, and you just overpower, or you put down so much strength that even if you're trying to pass on them, if you've won round one, as Skellige sometimes will just try to pass on you so they can play the strong rounds 2 and 3, it's really hard to get ahead of them to pass on that round 2. So they get the card, and that card could be Ceres, that card could be Armorsmith to undo your weather. A card could be, you know, another Priestess to get all the Queen's Guards back up if you've managed to eliminate them. And it's a scary deck. I don't know how scary it is at this current time, but
yeah, we'll see how
scary before.
We'll see how much the power has shifted in or away from discard's favor. Obviously, the nerfs mean that it's probably weaker, but is it weaker than Wounding? I want to know, first of all, though, what happened to the Skirmishers?
Yeah, where'd they go?
They were buffed in base strength by 2.
Yeah.
But their buff now is +3 when resurrected instead of +4 to their base strength. So it seems like they're still stronger than they were last patch unless you got off more than 2 resurrections.
Yeah, it just shows that when you change something about a card like the buff on paper, it just deters the auto inclusion. I think that from a balance standpoint, that's what you always want to do. I think that you look at the change in decoy, mainly because decoy was in so many decks. And and even the change to Yennefer right now, it was such a strong gold card, even though the nerf isn't, you know, I think her ability is what's really strong, but that nerf is just a couple of points, but it still deters inclusion. People don't like playing with nerfed things generally. So we'll see.
Guns, though, those are fun.
Oh, yeah, you want to play with Nerf guns all the time.
I got a 6-year-old son. Of course I play with Nerf guns all the time.
I have no children, and I have 2 in my drawer right now. So Nerf guns
are
great.
You're ready whenever the need arises, whenever...
when the zombie apocalypse happens, I'm your guy.
High
I got 2
noon.
Nerf guns in my drawer. Yeah, it's high noon.
So the reason I bring up the Skirmisher is because when the patch launched, I tried to make self-wounding work. And by trying to make self-wounding work, I tried to make Warcry work. Because Warcry is the only board double anymore. It's the only double at all. And Skirmishers with a Savage Bear on the board would, you know, if you got a couple of resurrections off, they'd be hitting the board at like a 15 wounded.
Yeah.
So that's a 15 value out of 1 unit on a Warcry. You get 2 of those guys up there. Or if you get a couple other high value cards, if you're balancing your rows out, like running a couple ships as well, you can get a ton of value out of Warcry. You don't have to play... you don't have to play pure Axemen builds, but Axemen are kind of what I discovered when playing that, because Warcry was kind of clunky. It was hard to hold it to the last round because you'd only have 1 or 2 resurrects. One of those resurrects would therefore have to be a bear. Then the next one was one skirmisher maybe. So you get 15 value out of Warcry and hope it was fine. I think the deck lists now are focusing more on those Axemen, and the Clan Twistark Axemen are the bronze unit that buffs itself by +1 when ever any unit on the board is wounded, and that synergizes really well with Herald.
So, not just wounded though, when anything has its strength reduced in any way.
And you would think that Krakon Krait is the leader for that, because he has 2 self-wound cards that he spawns, plus those cards are buffed. That leader still doesn't work as well as Herald, because Herald's guaranteeing at least, you know, if you got 5 units on the board in a random round, let's say 1 or 2 of them are wounded because you had a bear out there. You know, Herald's going to get you about 15 strength or 13 strength. Well, those Axemen, if you've got 2 each, are each going to grow by 5. You're getting 10 more value out of your Axemen. So it's just synergy with Herald is great. These guys are getting gigantic. In a long round 1 or round 2, they're 50, 60 strength apiece. And you can hit them with Adrenaline Rush.
Mm-hmm. And Stamelford's is also huge, hits everything on the board. So, you know, it's like the card that buffs itself so many times in an instance that like the card actually goes black because all the buff animations are running on it. It's like
I love
black and then it glows green. So yeah, they're crazy cards.
Speaking of that, one of the bug fixes we didn't mention was that when you did Adrenaline Rush, one of the aforementioned Axemen, all the cards being removed from the board would buff the Axemen.
You know, I was wondering why, after all the weather was clearing on me, that they were like, why is this thing at 30?
They were gigantic. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So that's something that they fixed, and I'm glad they fixed that so quickly. This hotfix couldn't have come soon enough for a problem like that, hopefully before a lot of people discovered and abused it, because that is definitely a bug, and that was probably tilted a lot of people.
Yeah, like you look at like when foglets get removed from the board, they go to 0 before they're removed. So it's like strength being removed. Anyway, yeah, there were a lot of heralds out there last night, I'll tell you for sure. But now let's talk about Northern Realms. And I think I wanted to highlight this specifically because I feel like Northern Realms has always been in the center of controversy when they have strategy that wins games. So you've had your Trebuchet Adrenaline Rush promote. No one liked that. You've had
the
Roach
original
promote,
full test cheese, guys.
The original
full test cheese.
The old cheddar. So, and then you have, you know, you had Roach and Botchling promote, and then you had Poor Infantry full test, which spiked in popularity. It was really oppressive when it was really strong. And then you had Demoting Baron, and it all felt like abuse. But some community members, top ranked players and proper Gwentleman from Team Gwentleman, Dunkoro and Ruben, they come up with a really cool Radovid deck. They call it the Punisher Radovid, and the deck list is in the show notes. And the reason why why I wanted to highlight this deck is because I think that Northern Realms deserves a spotlight when they have a deck that's just well-built with new cards, competitive, using new and changed cards, and really nothing gross, I think, is really in this deck. It's just kind of a nice, solid deck, and we played it, both of us, this week. What did you think about this Northern Realms deck?
Well, I think that a lot of the core functions of Northern Realms have changed. No longer is Northern Realms the medic everything faction. Medics were nerfed to only resurrect bronzes. They were nerfed in strength. The only real value out of medics was maybe getting some thinning with them medicking Reaver Scouts. But really, that's not a lot of value anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that Dunkoro and Ruben looked at it was, how can we make Northern Realms work and not center the everything around medics anymore? And so they turned to the King of the North. Mm-hmm. They turned to Radovid. And they said, why don't we make control? Because all of these new decks that are coming out, Axemen decks, you know, Nilfgaard decks, focus on high strength buffed units. Well, let's stop that from happening. Let's play Bork, even though Bork doesn't get played much anymore. Let's play Scorch. Let's make Scorch meta again. Mm-hmm. You know, let's play Siri because card advantage is king in a meta where spies aren't getting bounced anymore. And they put together this deck that really is quite amazing. And you know, we saw included in it, of course, was Yennefer Conjurer, which is just gigantic amounts of power. You don't have to play a wounding build or an Axemen build to make this work. Every faction makes Yennefer the Conjurer work. But they played no medics.
That's right. Except for Nanika, but yes.
Nanika is in the current updated version after removing Ockfist.
Yeah, so this is in flux. Of course, there is a link in the show notes, but the deck list is always in flux as they are, you know, the deck is constantly being tested and updated by Dunkoro and Ruben. As it stands right now, your gold cards are Siri, Vernon, Villain Trenton Mirth, and Yennefer Conjurer. And I think that Yennefer Conjurer's power in the meta dictates that Radovid is a good leader because it removes Yennefer, and Vernon is a good gold because it also removes Yennefer, and Yennefer's in it because she's good.
Yeah, she hasn't been removed from the deck. So she's still 7 in Northern Realms, which means she can't be removed by anything but Radovid. So in the mirror, think about having Siri in a mirror match. How many times is Siri the knee-jerk Radovid?
Exactly,
When you play your Siri. And now, it's going to be quite a decision to make playing in a mirror match. Do you kill Siri or do you kill Yen Conjurer? So I feel like this deck, it's centered around removal. There's trebuchets in here. It's centered around thinning. They play both Reaver Hunters and Temerian Foot Soldiers. And they play Priscilla, of course, and a couple of First Lights, plus Weather, Stennis, because card advantage is king again, and Scorch. So here's the thing. This deck is a lot of fun to play. And it is really much more difficult, I think, to pilot than the Baron Resurrection deck, because there isn't a defined win condition. The win condition really is control your opponent and have more strength at the end and obtain card advantage through Stennis, Siri, and maybe some Yennefer Conjurer overpowering.
Yeah, I think resurrecting a demoted Baron really was an I win button, and I don't like using those terms very much, but I think that anybody who's played MMOs for a long period of time or, you know, it's always like, oh, this class is broken because it has an I win button, because you just play your demoted Baron, it comes out at Lubberkin reses, I'm probably missing some steps here, but Nanika comes out, Lubberkin reses, you know, you Shani demoted Baron. Anyway, the point is that it was a very explosive thing. There was lots of medics. Eventually, it ended with Yennefer Conjurer, if you also demoted that, coming back. And it was a whole bunch of nonsense. But this is, you know, it's not as defined. And I do like that. It actually requires some piloting, a little bit more strategy. And if you think you have what it takes, you should check the deck out. It does run, you know, it's running some new cards. It runs Temerian Foot Soldier to assist in the thinning along with Reaver Hunters. It does run the Ballistas, which are still 5 strength, but are buffed to removing 3 strength. And now every class, every faction has that now. That's like a new addition. But Ballistas are better than they were. And there's lots of, you know, you get a lot of full value out of it. They're 8 Kidwinny Siege support, usually support themselves as 9. And of course, there's lots of control in your Scorch, Weather. Dime Redeem Shackles is now currently in the build. And Alzir's Thunder as well to remove some of the stronger, peskier bronzes. it just you have to really feel out each matchup, and I think that's why I like it so much, is that it takes a lot of decision making and not just can I demote Baron? Great. Can I res Baron? Great.
The best part about this deck too is because the golds and silvers are so powerful and swingy, you can be very aggressive when you mulligan. And so one of my favorite tactics with this deck is to aggressively mulligan away either one of my Temerian Foot Soldiers or one of my Reaver Hunters and then pull it out with Priscilla. Or First Light if I'm feeling really risky. And the reason for that is just achieving such kind of maximum thinning with this deck is really beneficial, because you have a lot of really powerful gold cards in this deck. And the thing is if you can get through your deck, almost in any deck in Gwent, if you can get all the way through it and get those power cards in your hand that you want, you're sitting pretty.
For sure. So if you think you have what it takes, check it out. Check out the link in the show notes. Thanks very much to Dunkoro and Ruben for writing a great, very concise, in-depth guide on this deck, and for letting us feature it on the show.
Just to kind of give you the idea of how good this deck is, I've never played a non-medicking Northern Realms deck. I literally picked this deck up and jumped into ranked mode and went 10-5 and climbed to 3750 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just That's so powerful. Right? Just make sure you get your sequencing right and you'll win.
It's all about that. It's all about that sequencing, order of play. So yeah, great community contribution, great contribution to the ladder. I think that Northern Realms needed a strong, well-built deck that people just didn't hate on principle. So I think that I like that very much. But speaking of the community, we do have some emails we're going to go through. And of course, we have the tweet of the week. So let's check those out after this short break. So we got a great email over the last couple of days. This one comes in from Eric. He says, not sure if this has been discussed in the community, but I would love to see a show cards option at the end of the match, similar to poker. And he, of course, he's saying like when you fold or when a game is over, you can show, it's like, oh, here's what I had if you were interested. He continues, if we have cards left at the end, we can choose to show our opponents without having to play them. Also, do you think beta players will get an exclusive card to use when beta ends? Thanks again, okay. Eric. So first of all, Eric, we are getting premium Geralt as beta testers. So there is that. We will always have premium Geralt, and that is the gift that CD Projekt Red is given to us. I don't know if anybody else will be able to obtain that, or if that will be kind of our special thing that everybody, years from now covets but can never have. So we'll see. And I feel like it's fine for me to say that now, because if you're playing, you're in the beta. And anyway, about the show cards thing, I think this is a very polarizing opinion. I think that some people might think that it may be kind of it could be considered BM, which is short for bad manners, just to always show cards like, look, I gotcha. Or maybe it's only something that, maybe only something that the winner could do or the loser could do, or how you would organize it. I don't know if it's because right now, if you just play your cards out, your opponent's just going to forfeit on you if they've lost. They don't care. I feel like generally people don't care what's in your hand. What do you think about it?
That's actually a pretty good way to approach this, is generally showing your opponents your cards isn't going to do anything positive. Yeah. So I think a lot of times when you would have the option to show your cards, the opponent doesn't want to see them.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when some people play their cards out as a way of doing this option, right? It's not bad manners. No, I don't think a lot of people mean to have it be bad manners. I think it's they play them out to show them the cards. Hey, by the way, I even had this too. Look at how well I played. And I feel like that's kind of the issue, right? Is it's if you show your cards, you're just sort of showing off. And the problem is online, you can't communicate an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So if the emotion you're trying to communicate is, hey, well played. Look, I had nothing left anyway. So if you had anything, I would have lost. Or if I forfeit or pass before I'm out of cards, I would show you all I had left for two dead first lights or something,
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it could be used positively. I feel like there's ways it could be used negatively, such as bad manners, showing off what you still had. Look, I didn't even play Villain Tretton Mirth. And that's kind of something that CD Projekt Red doesn't want to be a part of Gwent. And while I like the poker comparison, if you notice when you watch the World Series of Poker, a lot of times those guys never flip their cards. And the point is they're not showing what their strategy actually was. And there's no benefit to showing your cards as a player, because then you're showing, look at the rest of my deck build. Why would you want to do that? And
yeah,
it's controversial only because it doesn't seem to have a very cost, like a very favorable cost benefit.
For sure. It's a cool discussion topic, though.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the question. That was really great. We never thought we'd talk about something like that.
No, it's cool. I like the niche questions like that. Any tweets you wanted to mention, or any other community feedback?
Yeah, we had a tweet come in this week from Commando BJ the Brave. He wants to know, what card or mechanic has most underwhelmed you since the patch, and which card exceeded expectations? Yeah, I was going to say, why don't you lead off with the card that has underwhelmed you?
Underwhelmed me. I think my answer is actually both. I think I can use the same card to articulate both answers, which is weird. I know.
Yeah, go but for it.
So I'm going to use the example of Squirtle's new gold, Ithleen. So Ithleen is a 6-strength gold card that after two turns locks the row she's played on for both sides. So I think that Ithleen is underwhelming because I feel like her strength is a little low, and I feel like the timer makes it. I feel like the strength is already low and the timer is also compensating for something. That being said, I think I like the lock mechanic more than I thought I would like it, because it really, especially in Skellige's case, when we're talking about Axemen, it locks the unit. They don't get any benefit from the unit and they can't resurrect the unit. So that's, I don't know. I'm not playing locks at the moment, but I know that I always consider putting Cleaver in neutral decks, and I definitely consider putting Ox in my Nilfgaard decks. So it's kind of both things. I think that Ithleen is underwhelming, but I think that locking is better than I thought it would be, if that makes any sense.
No, that makes perfect sense, and that's a very interesting take. I like that take on Ithleen. I hadn't even thought about her. She was so underwhelming to me. I feel like you're right, that maybe the 6-strength body isn't enough and the one timer doesn't help her at all. But I'm not so sure. She's so situational. At one point, do you want to have a row opposite of you that you want to lock the whole thing down? Is that maybe a Monsters Consume row with two Vrans on it? How often are you going to see that?
Row of Axemen, row of Warships, maybe?
Potentially. It's just so situational since a lock is valued between what? Three and seven?
Well, Ox is a 7. But Cleaver for neutral is a 5. So yeah. If silver cards, they're both silver cards, right? They both do the same thing. One is stronger than the other because one's a faction card and one is a neutral card. So you can say that it's roughly between, you know, 3 and 5, I guess, as far as like card balance.
Yeah, so that makes sense. I think that you're right that maybe it is even tiered lower than I expected. But again, as you say, it is very valuable at times, depending on the situation. And I feel like, again, that Ithleen's so situational that you're not going to get a lot of play with that card. And for me, the most underwhelming card is the Clan Drummond Shield Maiden in Skellige.
Really?
So this card requires a board state. It requires a self-wounding deck, first of all. And we talked about this on the last podcast as being maybe one of the better cards because it enforces a mechanic, but then is also, you know, thinning. So when you ever add thinning to a mechanic that you already want to employ, it's pretty good. Mm-hmm. But the problem is it is too specific, where it only thins from your deck if you have wounding on the board. And specifically, a Savage Bear does pull out all three. Otherwise, you're only pulling out one with a wound. Then you have to play two different wounds in a row. It's kind of rough. And for me, Skellige focuses so much on graveyard play. Having three bronzes in your deck that are not useful in any other way, except for a little bit of thinning, I feel like they're not that great. And they're not good to resurrect either because they have no bonuses. They're not weather immune. They're just 4-strength bodies on the board if you play them in round one. So I was very underwhelmed by them, and I really liked them starting out. I thought, as we said last week, that they'd be really good. And I built my first self-wound deck with them, and they were the first cards that I removed.
Yeah, they are seeing play, though, but I see where you're coming from. What about your favorite mechanic?
Yeah, a card that exceeded expectations? It would have to be a new card, wouldn't it?
Well, not necessarily. It could be a changed card.
Could be a changed card. Yeah, so taking a look at that, I mean, there wasn't a lot of... So spies, we'll just say that. I think that spies were effectively nerfed into the ground. They were... All of their strength was increased. they're all made immune to weather, which made them no longer, no longer leverage plays anymore. You can't play one for one strength anymore. You can't play one for only eight strength anymore. And the change to those doesn't really affect their inclusion. When I'm building a deck, I don't ask myself, really, do I want Donar and Birna? The answer is always, because as we mentioned, if you have that final card advantage, your final card is an Armorsmith, you reset Weather. If your final card is Restore, you resurrect everything that was burned with Scorch. If you're able to save that final card, you have the Finisher, and you have that control. So long as you maintain some win condition in your hand, you will win if you can get the card advantage. And so I feel like with the changes to Spies, maybe making people not include them so much, it's made them better. Because less people have them, so less people can get card advantage.
Also, Avalok is the best spy in the game, I think, because he was unchanged. And he's still, he's probably, the easiest to play, because you don't have to be ahead by a lot to feel comfortable playing it. And I think there's more of a decision that the decision, instead of playing spies, it's not like, okay, I always play it in round two when I have won round one, or I always play it into weather. Now it's, okay, I need to identify when I'm done, when I'm out of the round, and then play the spy and see if my opponent passes. And then maybe you have an option to win the round after all. Maybe you're running Scorch. I know that I've tried a Squirtle deck that runs Scorch and Yavin. So there's different ways of functioning. There's different ways of running the spies, basically. And I think that, yeah, it's cool now. It's riskier, but it's cool. I like it a lot. Great question from BJ.
You.
Thanks so much for writing in.
Yeah, he's the man. Thanks so much for the question. And everybody, if you like to hear these tweets of the week, please tweet us at Commander's Horn on Twitter, and we will read our favorite tweet of the week and answer it.
Absolutely. And we'd also like to thank our patrons at Patreon. This week, we'd like to thank our brand new patrons, David A., Derek D., and Renat A.
Commandos!
Thanks to our commandos, and thanks everybody for listening, being a part of the audience, writing in, and just hanging out with us in general. Once again, you can find us on Twitter at Commander's Horn, and you can email us at commandershornpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to find Josh, you can find him at GreyBoxerGwent on Twitter and GreyBoxer on Twitch, GreyBoxer on YouTube as well, and I can be found at McBearded on Twitch, at McBeardCH on Twitter, and McBeard on YouTube.
Yeah, we appreciate you hanging out with us today. Stay tuned for updates about next week, and enjoy the patch. This is the best time ever to be playing Gwent. Until then, this is GreyBoxer.
And this is McBeard.
Best of luck.
On the path.